to an adventure in Putnam on W4CY Radio.
Wake up, America! It's time for the adventures of Hype Man on W4CY.com, West Palm Beach's number one internet radio station. Here's your host, the Hype Man.
This is the Pipe Man here on the Adventures of Pipe Man W4CY Radio. And I'm very excited about our next guest. And for one big reason, you know, forget that they have great music, because I don't even know if that matters for the interview. It just matters that they're from Jersey. And that's all that's cool for this. So I'm going to welcome to the show Joe from Eye of the Destroyer.
Thank you very much, and I don't know if I can live up to such an incredible intro, so I'm going to do my best, but that pretty much does sum me up. I mean, I'm about as New Jersey as it gets, and you're gonna get that from me in this interview, that's for sure.
Nice. Well, yeah, as long as you're not, like, from, you know, Cherry Hill, because that's not really Jersey. Like, I don't know why people from there call themselves from Jersey. You might as well just be from Philly.
If you're... Well, I mean, at that point, it's all about the football team you support, really, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you're into the Eagles, then you know, that's where you're at. You know, you're down in Cherry Hill.
Yeah, no doubt. Listen, in my viewpoint, if you're an Eagles, Flyers, or Phillies fan, you're not from Jersey. Just saying.
I have a lot of friends from the southern part of New Jersey that would definitely beg to differ.
I'm sure.
But I do agree that if you're calling it a hoagie and not a submarine, then we definitely have to have a conversation about it.
There you go. And I have to also say that not many people know this, but the Mason-Dixon line crosses across southern Jersey. So, like, if you're too south in Jersey, you're a southerner, so you're not one of us.
That's hilarious. There's definitely a North Jersey, South Jersey line. And, you know, as the joke kind of has continued on, it's Central Jersey doesn't exist, which is, I think, is hilarious, personally, especially because my wife is from there. And, you know, busting her chops on whether or not Central Jersey is a thing is probably one of my favorite pastimes.
Oh, I love it, because, you know, it's funny because, you know, I grew up in North Jersey, but I also lived in Central Jersey. And then, you know, the last place I lived before I moved to Florida, I was down the shore. And, like, to me, down the shore is, you know, I lived in Ocean Township, so it's Monmouth County or maybe even Ocean County. It's not Cape May. Okay, that's not, to me, that's Cape May. That's not, like, when somebody says down the shore to me, or like they say, I'll say something like, I came from down the shore. Oh, are you, like, from Wildwood or something? I'm like, no.
You know. Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Elizabeth, so I was about 15 minutes out from the city for most of my life, like breathing in that Gothel's Bridge 1 in 9 smog.
Nice.
and just loving it. But we spent a ton of time in what I consider to be down the shore, which is, you know, like the Ortley Beach, Toms River, Seaside area.
Yep. Yep.
I grew up down there too. My father lived down there. My mother was up north. So, you know, I experienced both sections in New Jersey, and I definitely spent a little bit of time in Wildwood, and I was in Cape May maybe a week and a half ago with my kid. So I totally, you know, as far as New Jersey goes, I mean, I joke and I kid, but all jokes aside, I just fucking love this place. I think it makes some really terrific human beings. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure associated with living here and a lot to live up to. And I think that pressure builds diamonds, and that's really what this place should be known for.
No doubt. You know, and it's quite interesting because I am always a Jersey boy, and, like, I've been in Florida for a while now, and I still can't stand. I can't tell people
whereabouts.
I live in.
Where
well,
you live in Florida?
Our studios that I'm talking to you from now are in Wellington. Do you know where that is? It's near West Palm, and I live on Singer Island, which is also near West Palm, but a different part. And, you know, like literally the beach.
Oh, that's awesome. I lived right outside of Orlando for a long time in a small town called Castleberry.
Yeah.
I was down there for like 7 years. My dad still lives down there. My sister's down there too. So I did my time in the South as well. And it was definitely a strange experience.
It's a culture shock. It's still a culture shock to me. Like you talked about the people. Okay. That's one of the things I miss most, because to be blunt, the people here are assholes and idiots. Even the people that come from New York and New Jersey, it's like the sun warps their brain or something, because they're not the same as they were up there. Okay. And, you know, and I grew up in Little Falls, Montclair, and Roseland, so not far from you. And my parents actually met in Elizabeth. My grandparents owned a kosher bakery that was like known everywhere in Elizabeth on my father's side. And then my
Mazel tov to them. I mean, yeah. Jesus Christ. Well, that's about as great as it can get. I mean, especially in Elizabeth.
Yeah, no doubt. And then my grandfather on my mother's side, get this is how you know how Jersey I am. He owned a speakeasy in Jersey, you know, so he was Italian mafia.
That's
so
awesome.
So I have both. I could give you a bagel and then threaten you at the same time.
That's the best of both worlds. You know what I'm saying? Every good mob man needs an incredible lawyer and an incredible deli. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You're going with the best of both worlds.
I'm the one-stop shop. I'm the one-stop shop, right? You know, I got both.
That is totally an Eye of the Destroyer thing, because you have me, and I'm about as, you know, I come up through these very Italian roots, and our bass player, Kaufman, is, you know, was raised Jewish. I mean, he's an East Brunswick kid, and it's awesome to speak to somebody that really understands those two worlds, because we live in those worlds every day.
There you go. And, you know, they're not really that far apart when you're from up there. Maybe other places, but... You know, it's the same kind of upbringing, the same kind of family values. You know, the difference I always say to people is the Jew in me will negotiate with you. And if that doesn't work, the Italian will threaten you.
And you know what? I don't know if there's anything more true than that. That's hilarious and extraordinarily historically accurate.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, so going back to music, okay, sir, you mentioned Seaside. I'll give you some interesting history about me. The first album I ever had in my life was when this album came out, and I was at Seaside Heights, and I won it at the Boardwalk, and the album just came out. It was the original Kiss album.
There's not much cooler, I don't think, than that story.
Right. I mean, that started it all for me. Like, you know, and that,
I would imagine that sent you on a bit of a trip, huh?
Oh, no doubt. You know, it's funny because I was a total Kiss fanatic as a kid. And then I was also a Beatles fanatic at the same time. And then I started to get to I have this I don't know, bipolar thing going on. In like fifth grade, I was listening to Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, and Grateful Dead, you know. And then I went from that to Priest and Maiden, and then I went from that to Slayer. And
so it was a bit of a heavy progression, then, wasn't it?
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. And it's That's where I am to this day. Like, you know, I still like all those other things, but, you know, I am definitely a thrash metalhead for sure. Like, I left Jersey and moved to California when I was like 12 years old, 1980. And
that's cool.
I went to the first Slayer show in LA ever in 1981. And then I just this last year covered the second to last Slayer show ever in Oakland. So that was pretty cool.
That is about as cool as it gets in order to wrap up, you know, an entire, you know, almost a lifetime of thrash metal fandom.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know,
I mean, that's about as cool as it gets.
Yeah, I used to go see Metallica when they had like 25 people come to the Troubadour. And then I remember I moved back to Jersey, okay? So when I was done with high school, I moved back to Jersey to go to Rutgers. And all my friends in Jersey are trying to tell me because of, you know, the Old Bridge Militia. They're all trying to tell me.
The Old Bridge Metal Militia,
yeah.
and Birch Hill.
Yep, and they're trying to tell me, oh, yeah, Metallica's from Jersey. I'm like, hey, dude. They're from Jersey.
Hey, dude.
they're from Jersey after they were from Frisco, after they were from L.A. So you're like third in line, okay? I'm a Jersey boy,
yeah,
but
I'm
not giving...
You know what I think is interesting about Metallica is, you know, you got to give it to a guy or a group of guys, rather, especially in their case, Lars and James mainly. You got to give it to them because, you know what, to be able to go to Jersey and be like, we're from here, and to go to California, we're from here now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they just, what a marketing scheme. You know what I'm
Oh,
like,
no doubt.
What do we
everybody
have to do to get our band be the biggest band ever?
I know. Everybody thinks that Metallica is from their town. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, and
they have somehow figured out a way to get every single person to directly identify with them in some way. You know what I mean? It's like you said, everybody thinks they're from their town. So they're automatically your favorite band.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, that's what we got to do for you guys. Okay, so... You got the Jersey lockdown. Now we got to figure a way to get everybody in every other town to associate that you're from their town, too. You might have to change the accent a little.
We have a marketing scheme here.
You might have to change the accent a little because that might throw people off.
I think that part, honestly, it's funny that you say that because when I came back from living in Florida for a while, I had gone, you know, I would hang out with my friends from Jersey and they would be like, dude, your voice, your dialect, everything's changed. And I'm like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. But apparently at the time I'm like, well, man, I'm finna go to the damn store and I got to get my ass over here because, you know, it's time to wake up. And I don't know what the hell's going on, but I'll tell you one thing right now, motherfucker. I'm not going to take my ass to 7-Eleven. I got to go to the goddamn Wawa because I'm hungry and I need to get myself a motherfucking sub. And they were just like, who the hell is this guy? You know, but you spend enough time around people that you kind of just pick up what they say and their accent. It's kind of an interesting thing about moving around and adapting to new surroundings.
Oh, it's so true because I've been here and then, you know, my head engineer here who, you know, passed away about a year ago, but he was, I assumed his like Southern, a little bit Southern, and I didn't even notice. And then, you know, a couple people were saying, are you from Alabama? I'm like, do you want to get punched in the face?
Motherfucker, no. Oh, shit, that's funny.
So let's talk about the new EP you got coming out here today. I'm very excited. It's like a birthday present for me because my birthday's on Sunday. So you gave me some badass metal for my birthday weekend. So let's talk about that.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. And I'm very excited about the EP that's coming out. You know, I mean, obviously, this has been a long time coming for us. It's been an incredible experience. It's been a really healing experience for me. It was very, very much a dark EP with, you know, a lot of people have said that it's like reading pages of a diary. And I'm really glad that that's how it comes off because, to be honest with you, it very much is. It's a very personal record for me. It was a very healing experience to have gone through all of this and to kind of lay out my personal human experience on a record and use this creativity to heal from a lot of this trauma has been, you know, just honestly, just an incredible experience. And I can liken it to nothing that I've ever had in my life before, because it's just, it really has healed so much for me and just moved me into a totally different direction as a human being. And that's just incredibly powerful.
And you know what? That's what music and specifically metal is all about, in my opinion. Like, it's the best therapy ever. Like, people that never really got into metal don't understand the healing therapy of metal.
Yeah, it's totally true. You know, they think that metal is just this aggressive thing or this mad thing and everybody's so negative. But, you know, I think what's wonderful about metal is that – it gives you an outlet, you know? No one wants to go out and punch some dude in the face because they're aggravated with something that had happened with their wife or something that had happened with their father or anything. You know, they lost their job. But you get in the car, you throw on, you know, you throw on whatever, you throw on Slayer. For me, you know, South of Heaven is one of my favorite records. So for me, if I throw that on, you know, that can improve my mood greatly within the first two tracks. You know what I'm saying? It could change the whole course of my day.
It gives me a total adrenaline pump, which gives you that euphoric feeling. Like, you, I remember even being a teenager and being at shows, and, like, I didn't even need to get high. All I had to do is go into the pit. You know, like, that was enough of a high for me.
Yeah, I totally agree because, you know, I can so directly relate because it's like when I first started going to shows, I was such an angry kid. I was so misunderstood. I mean, my family had no clue what to do with me. I was nothing like any of them. And to be able to get to a show and see people just kind of going nuts and letting out all this energy, you know, I was a very rambunctious guy in my early teens. And to be able to get into a scene like that where I could really, you know, where people related to my anger and I could get my anger out. I mean, it really took my life into a whole different direction. And I can confidently say that without the hardcore scene and without the metal scene that I came up with, and I would be a much different person and my life would be probably, you know, more of a drug addicted nightmare than it became.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's why I was saying what I did, because don't get me wrong, I got high. I was on the Sunset Strip in the 80s, you know, like if you remember.
I mean, yeah, you were partying, and if you weren't partying, then you weren't enjoying yourself.
Right. If you don't, if you can remember the 80s on the Sunset Strip, you weren't there. You know, you know, we used to, listen, I used to go to Metallica shows where were like 25 people at the Troubadour and they'd be like, yeah, let's go over my house afterward. You used to go over to their house afterwards and just like party all night long. And I'd pick up my friends in the bushes in the morning and shit like that. But
Is that lifestyle, though. That is that metal lifestyle that I think we're all hoping to live.
Yeah, but in the pit, I didn't need it. You know, in the pit, it was like, even if I got high, like, once I got in the pit, like, that was the ultimate high type of thing. And
yeah, it was. It was. Because you feed off that adrenaline. You know, it takes you into a different spot, takes you into a different mindset. And it just, the release itself, really, it's almost like getting high. You know, I mean, in so many ways, it's definitely better. You know, it's just an experience that's very difficult to describe with words, but it's just like the being able to let go of all of everything that's going on. Like, you know, you weren't thinking about anything that happened in your life. You were in that moment, like truly in that moment and enjoying it.
No doubt. No doubt about it. You know, funny story about Lamour's show I went to one time. Okay, so we're talking about Slayer. So I went to a Lamour show. It was a Slayer show. And it was winter, so it was freezing outside. But, of course, you know, I was wearing my cutoff T-shirt, you know, and you know, like you had to. And I went to the pit.
Yeah, full-blown thrash apparel.
Yeah, no doubt. And I went into the pit, you know, and then I was, you know, this show in particular, like, you know how there's usually places people could hide that don't want to be in the pit? There was no safe place to hide at Lamour's this night. And I remember so specifically, okay, that they did like three encores and then people started leaving Lamour's, like leaving. And then I heard what they did one more encore, like nobody expected. I heard the first note. It was Angel of Death. The first note of Angel of Death. After the first note, I watched like 200 people get slammed right out the door, you know, and then it just was utter freaking mayhem. And I remember after that, going outside, it must have been like, I don't know, 10, 15 degrees outside. I am dripping.
Brooklyn on a cold day.
No doubt. I'm dripping sweat, you know, and I'm bleeding. And I'm like, fuck yeah, that was the best ever. Like, you know.
Right. You didn't even notice how cold it was. That was not even on your mind.
No, not at all.
You walked outside and you were like, holy shit, did that just happen?
Yeah, exactly. No doubt. So that's life as a metalhead. And like you said, you can't really explain it.
Perfectly described.
Yeah, you can't really explain it. And, you know, I get that from listening to your music. Like, I listen to your new EP, my being the promoter preview version that people can't hear yet till it drops. And Man, I was, you know what it brought me back to? It brought me back to another epic show. Okay, so I was at the first show ever that had punk and metal at the same venue. Like, because back in the beginning, you were long hair. You couldn't.
Oh, yeah, you couldn't. Yeah, no, you couldn't put those two together. Mm-hmm. I had an interview yesterday where I was talking to a guy about this, where he said he had gone to an Agnostic Front show and he had to tuck his long hair under his baseball cap and he had to put a hoodie on over his And Justice for All shirt because he was going to get punched in the face if he went in there looking like that.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I used to go get my spikes. I tried to get my spikes at this place called Posers on Melrose, and I went with my three punk friends, and we walk in there, and then my friends like pull me aside. They knew the owners. They pull me aside, and they're like, "We have to leave." I'm like, "What do you mean we have to leave?" The owners came up to us. They don't like that you're long hair, and unless we leave and get you out of here in like 5 seconds, they are going to kick the living shit out of you. And that's just. And I'm like, okay, we're out. You know.
Well, you only have to tell me that one time. I know where I have to go now.
Exactly. So this one show, and okay, so I interviewed one of the bands about a year ago, and I actually interviewed two separate interviews with one of the bands from that show, and brought it up during the interview, and they both remembered. So I was like, I was floored.
That's cool as hell.
Wait till you hear who it was. So it was six bands. The three punk bands were Suicidal Tendencies, when they were just pure punk. COC, when they were hardcore punk. And I don't even remember the third punk band. But on the metal side, and this is where you guys reminded me of, the last one that I'll mention is what you remind me of. It was Savage Grace, Dark Angel, and then the last band, which you guys remind me of, Possessed.
Oh, that's fucking awesome. I don't know that I can, whatchamacallit, I don't know that I can stress enough how incredible that comment just made me feel.
I'm glad to hear it, you know, and this show was like...
That is an incredible show, bro. Metallica with 25 people is cool as shit. Slayer at L'Amour is cool as shit, but that's a heck of a fucking lineup
that was epic.
Right now. Three, bro, that's
no doubt.
Crazy.
You know what was better about it is the fact that there was no security there. It was at a place called the Sun Valley Sportsman's Lodge. It was basically an Elks Lodge, okay? They didn't know They didn't know who they sold this to. There was no security.
No.
It was mayhem, man. It was like like people were doing stage dives off the roof. You know, it was like
it was just absolute mayhem.
And then, you know, when I interviewed Woody and Mike from COC about a year ago, they both remembered that show. They're like, oh, that was the most epic show in our history.
How could you not remember that show?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the lineup alone is memorable, but then to have it happen in a fucking Elks Lodge?
Yeah.
With no type of security, no control over what was going to happen? I mean, the overall vibe must have just been like, holy shit, what's going to happen here tonight?
You know no doubt. I mean? The first ever show with...
What the fuck is going to happen here?
It was the first ever show with punk and metal at the same place. Like, who knows what would have happened?
That's so cool. I mean, that's so cool. They bridged such an incredible gap that night. You know what I mean?
No doubt.
Did so much for heavy music just on that night alone.
Absolutely. So yeah, when I started listening to your demo, I immediately went to Possessed. And you know, so and from me, that's a heavy compliment too, because they're one of my favorites. So.
Yeah. Dude, I can't thank you enough for saying that. I mean, it's always super interesting to me to hear what it provokes in people. You know, like it sounds like this or it sounds like that, but to get Possessed is, I mean, that's just awesome. And to have it bring up feelings of a show that is literally so memorable and a show that bridged the gap between punk and metal, which is literally what I feel like a lot of this record was about for me. I think that's awesome. And I'm just so glad, you know, to have you pick up what I'm putting down in such a way and such a deep way. That's awesome to me. I mean, really just a humbling experience to be compared to such an incredible band.
And that's what I want the listeners to know so that they can get your music and they can see for themselves. You know what else I'm impressed with too is, okay, so I played drums for 9 years when I was a kid in Jersey, and I was in percussion. Yep. You know, I played percussion in the school orchestra and played all that shit. And then I changed to guitar, and then I started singing thrash metal, and I sucked at all three, to be honest. So the fact that you can play all the instruments that you play, just like I am in awe of you, because I couldn't even master one of them, much less, you know, all of them.
You know, I started when, well, first of all, thank you. I mean, because that's just makes me feel incredible. And it makes the time that I've spent trying to be good at any of them well worth my time spent. And I started playing when I was a kid. I was about 5 years old. My dad had a drum set, and it was there. It was always around me. You know, people say it's in your blood, whatever the case may be. And maybe it was. But I really didn't get into playing until I was 13. I had played drums before, but for some reason, the kid that lived around the corner from me that was getting me into metal, he wanted to play drums, so I started playing guitar. So it was weird, though, because he left his drum set at my house. So here I am kind of learning guitar, but, like, the drum set's there, so, like, how the fuck do you not play the drum set? You know what I mean? So I just constantly sat down on it and kept playing. And over the years, you know, I had never really played drums in bands and stuff. And then when Eye of the Destroyer started, originally I was the guitar player, and our drummer had some drug addiction issues and he left the band. So I took over on drums and really just kind of, you know, that's when I would say my drums kind of blossomed and turned into an actual thing. But I've always been a guitar player. I've always wanted to sing for a band, and I got my opportunity on our last record to start doing vocals, and people were liking it. So I was like, fuck it. You know, who am I? I might as well do this. You know, like, if this is it, for me, it was all about creativity and expression. And I was finally getting that opportunity is how I felt about it. I was finally able to really put out some music that I felt like was really mine, you know, really what I wanted it to sound like. And it was super exciting. And, you know, I appreciate very much, you know, the compliment, and I thank you. It's definitely an incredible experience to look at a song from all of those perspectives. Yeah. You know, I've written with drummers, I've written with guitar players, and it's really crazy to look at a song and go, this is what the riff's going to be. I think the drums should sound like this, and maybe those will be the lyrics. You know, it's just a very cool perspective to have on songwriting.
Yeah, it must be kind of, in some ways, a lot easier because it's all in your own mind instead of different people's minds trying to match each other.
It is definitely, it has elements of it being easier. I'll tell you what the hard part is, though. The hard part is that, you know, it's much easier to write the songs because they represent a clear idea of what you want.
Yes.
But it's harder from my perspective to have people judge the art. Because yeah. It means so much more to me. You know what I mean? Now, because it's like, it's not like I can't say to myself, well, my riff could have been better. You know, maybe the song could have been better. This and that. There's nothing to say. It's like, if they don't like it, it's because you were sucking. You know what I'm saying? And I'm already such a harsh critic of my own shit that, like, you know, that part of the pressure, I will say, was definitely difficult for me. But the writing and stuff like that has been a fucking blast. And I've really, really enjoyed it. It's given me a very unique opportunity to get out a lot of pain. And I can't thank the record and the opportunity and Dan Kaufman, Eye of the Destroyer, and The Wolf You Feed more for that, because it's fucking been a healing experience for me. It really has.
I love hearing that. And that's why it's such a badass album, because it's real and it comes from the deepest parts of your soul. And that's what people can relate to.
Well, I appreciate that, man. I'm very, very happy that that's what you get from it. And as far as comparing it to Possessed, I mean, I don't know if I can thank you enough for that. I mean, that's like, you might have to give me your address so I could send you a little bit, a couple dollars or something. I mean, Jesus Christ.
I love it. Why don't you tell everybody how they can connect to you guys on social media, get the new music, get your merch.
You can follow us on Facebook. Obviously, it's Eye of the Destroyer on Facebook. On Twitter or on Instagram, it's EOTD, Destroyer. You can get all of the new music, obviously, iTunes, Spotify. It's available everywhere. Google Play, all that stuff. It's available everywhere today. Our merch is available through our website, which is highpotencyproductions.com. We have a package up right now with a brand new shirt. We got a couple more shirt designs that we're going to be throwing up there soon. And the album is available. Physical copies of the album are available through that website. Once again, it's highpotencyproductions.com. So definitely take a look there if you're looking to get your hands on some merch. And, you know, you can, like I said, you can pick it up anywhere. It's available everywhere. Digital music is sold as of this morning. So definitely go out and take a listen. And, you know, even if you don't want to buy it, go on Spotify and listen to it there. Every little bit helps. And, you know, share the posts and follow us and take a look at what we're doing, because we're going to be putting out a lot more stuff and trying to release as much music as possible in the near future.
Nice. I love it. And can't wait to see you guys live when that happens again. You guys would be a perfect fit for Psycho Las Vegas. That would be
Yeah, you know what? That's a very interesting concept. And, you know, before this had happened, we were in talks about playing out in Vegas. We've been out to the West Coast, and we've been, you know, we've been all over the U.S. And so I'm definitely into that idea, and I would love to do that. And, I mean, as soon as shows start happening again, you're definitely going to be seeing us out there, because we've been itching to get back up on stage. And it's, you know, it's been a long time coming. I think that people now with COVID-19 are really, you know, really wishing that they had shows and wishing that they were going to the shows that were available to them back then. So I'm hoping that the turnouts start to get better and people start to appreciate it.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mentioned Psycho Las Vegas because, like, it's got a lot of death metal to it, and it's like a really badass festival. Last year I covered it, and the headliners were the original Misfits with Lombardo playing drums.
Yeah, that's about as cool as it gets.
Yeah, right. You know, talking
about a guy who likes thrash. Yeah. I don't know if it gets any cooler for you.
Yeah, no doubt. And talk about Jersey, like they're from Lodi. So yeah, there you go. It doesn't get much better than that. And then you combine Lombardo in the pick in the mix.
You've pretty much hit that trifecta between Lombardo and Jerry Only and Danzig. Yeah, exactly.
And Doyle. So, you know, like, it was pretty wild. But now, next year, let's see you guys there.
We would love to be a part of that. We would love to be a part of that. And I can't wait to start booking shows in the near future as soon as they open things back up and getting back out on stage. I really miss the conversations and meeting the people and the traveling. I mean, I really enjoyed all that.
Ditto. Love it. So any final words you want to leave our listeners with that maybe we haven't covered yet that you need and they need to know?
Honestly, other than listening to and having such a great conversation with a guy who's so embedded in thrash in New Jersey, that alone was a fantastic experience. So I just want to say thank you to you for giving me this opportunity to speak with you today and for giving me an outlet to promote the music. Once again, it's Eye of the Destroyer. The EP is The Wolf You Feed. It's out today. And give it a listen and let us know what you think. You know, reach out, send us a message. We reply to everything. I see everything right on my phone. So I'd love to talk with people, especially now that shows aren't happening. And I would love to get everybody's opinion on what we could do better or what they liked about the record. So hit me up and let me know what's going on.
You got it, brother. Great music, great talk, and great Jersey boy. And
Damn right. I appreciate it, bro.
All these listeners, they better, or else they'd be swimming in the Hudson River if they don't get your music.
Swimming with the fishes with a pair of cement shoes is what they say, right?
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Thanks a lot, bro, and look forward to seeing you live.
Thanks so much, brother. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Adventures of Pipe Man on W4CY Radio.